Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. My name is Ryan.
I'm Kelso.
I'm Elizabeth.
Hi, I'm Joe.
And we are joined by a whole bunch of other fun people today.
I'm Rachel. I work at Wellesley Books. I'm the school liaison and a bookseller, mostly in the children's department, but I dabble in a little bit of everything.
Hi, my name is Abby Rice. I am the frontline bookseller and a buyer at the Briar Patch in Bangor, Maine.
Hi, guys. I'm Paula McKinley. I'm the assistant director and youth services librarian at the Minot Sleeper Library in Bristol.
Woohoo! Yay, book people! So we are once again recording remotely because we're all in quarantine right now. So we're having a little bookish Zoom party, partying like introverts. We're all sitting at home talking about books. So let's see, how is everyone doing with quarantine? How are you guys doing? Are you reading? Are you not reading? Are you thriving? Are you barely surviving? How's it going?
I was doing real well until last night. I was stirring my jar of natural peanut butter, you know, the kind that has like the oil that settles on the top. And I was stirring vigorously and it splashed onto my shirt and I got peanut butter oil on my shirt and I was just like the worst thing that had ever happened to me because apparently my brain has the bandwidth to keep calm about big things, but the little thing just like pushed me over the edge and I was just a wreck about my shirt, which is not even my favorite shirt. It was just that one more thing. But with big things, I'm doing okay. Not a lot of reading going on. I mean, I have small children, so you know, my isolation is not really isolated. And they're at the age where if there's silence in the house, it's because something's being lit on fire. So I don't get as much reading time as I think other people in quarantine are getting, but I have this brain fog going on right now where it's really hard for me to focus on some books. I've had a couple books that have been easily digestible by my brain that we can talk about, but it's been hard to actually focus on books or to pick them up and bring myself to read them.
Yeah, agreed. Both on the front of having small children and the brain fog. I'm definitely finding it really, really difficult to pick up a book right now. And I'm not really sure really why. It's sort of like I pick up a book and I'm really excited to read it because like all of the books in my to read stack, I've been so excited to just devour for so long. And I pick up the book and I'm like three sentences in and I realize I haven't processed anything. And so I read the three sentences again and again and again. And then I just put the book down because I'm like, I need to go do something else. But I will say I've been doing a lot of audiobooks because I am still going into work a couple days a week because Gibson's, while closed to the public, we are still processing and shipping online orders. So I've been going in a little bit and, you know, I have basically an hour long commute. So I've been crushing some audiobooks. And for a while I was reading some like sweet romances and like nice little like kind of popcorn books, like really sweet and fun and easy to listen to. And I was like, this is like good for quarantine. This is good for my brain. And then the last two books I read or listened to were just like straight thriller mysteries that involved some sort of like kidnapping of a small child. And I'm like, oh, but I don't know. I guess it's what my brain wanted. So I've been doing really well with audiobooks. So I still feel like I'm ingesting literature, but yeah, I've been having a tough time actually like reading a physical book. It's been, the brain fog is so real.
It's funny that you say that because I've noticed that I have been able to, I feel like I have to let myself listen to something that I like. I feel like I have to make the conscious decision to allow myself and forgive myself doing something fun, which doesn't make a lot of sense, except it does. I feel like I need to constantly be doing something or working towards something productive. So I did actually, I've crushed two or three audiobooks this month. because I can listen to them while I'm sewing or knitting. So if I am have done something productive, it's like I've given myself permission to do something that brings me joy instead of something that brings me survival. And it's been this weird dichotomy.
I'm doing, but I feel like week by week I do better and better in the same way that like the big picture thing, I'm starting to wrap my head around it, and I'm making sure that I try to stay off. I don't really look at the news if I can't help it. Like, I try to stay away from that, because the second I do that, it's just a spiral of like, oh God, what, you know, this is something that's so out of my control. So I tend to stay away from that, and I find that that does help. But I honestly think if I happen to spill peanut butter on my shirt, that would be too, you know, that would get me. I completely understand the little things just like pushing you over the edge. But I have been managing to read. I'm a really slow reader, which I constantly feel guilty about. Like I take my time with books. And I feel like I'm taking more time with the ones I'm reading now, which is okay. I think if our store was open, which it's not, it's been closed to the public for a couple weeks now, but we're doing online orders still. I feel like I'd feel more pressure to read more quickly and keep up more quickly. But now that we're sort of in this weird stasis, it's like, okay, I can take my time with this, and it just sort of absorb it a little more. So I have managed to read a couple novels, couple graphic novels, which are always the best. I'll do a shout out and say anyone who says they aren't books is so full of it. I'm going to put it out there right now. But yeah, so doing better. And I think week by week as this goes, I feel like I will progressively get a little better and a little better.
I just finished my second book in the last month and a half, which I'm like, I'm usually a 2-book-a-week person because I like books. But it was a struggle. Like I had to sit and force myself before bed every night, just read a little bit, because it seems like the only thing my brain's been able to absorb is Animal Crossing. I'm one of those people. Like it's just the only way I can zone out. And so I found myself when I was reading, like I just finished the sequel to Darius the Great Is Not Okay. And they were like at school, going to prom and like hugging and stuff. And I'm like, no, don't do that. That's bad. So it's like this complete disconnect of like what reality was 2 months ago versus what reality is now. And it took a while for me to be able to be like, okay, it's fine. You can read this book. Look at it like a fantasy novel.
It's a different world.
It's historical. Yes, it's an alternate universe.
Well, this timeline sucks. So
yeah. Listen, I'm not saying it has to do anything to do with the fact that I changed my pinned tweet for the first time in years when I had another one go viral, but I changed my pinned tweet and everything just went after that. So just saying.
Love the humble brag about the viral tweet.
I know.
Rachel goes viral like all the time.
Yep.
I don't know what it is. That's my superpower, I guess. And I can't fly, I can't see through walls, but boy, I can make a tweet blow up.
I'm currently quarantined with a 12-year-old extrovert who doesn't understand how to social distance whenever we go out to a supermarket. Yeah, so it's been difficult. Most of my days have been Minecraft online on the TV with his buddies almost all the time. And he also doesn't like school, so I'm trying really hard to find more creative ways to get him to do his distance learning, but at the same time, like, keep everybody sane. So I haven't been reading all that much. What I am reading is like kids' books. So right now we're listening to Percy Jackson and the Olympians, the first one on audiobook.
Nice.
And it's
those really, are good audiobooks.
Yeah, it's really, really, it's really good. And what our compromise was, because he has to do a book report at the end of every month. So we picked this one together, and I said, okay, I will buy you the book. You have to sit there and read the book, but you can also listen to it with headphones on. And he spent an hour and a half sitting there listening to the audiobook while reading it, and it was really helpful. He really got the story and the plot, which I was really afraid that he wouldn't do. And yeah, he's like, I really like this. Do you have the second one at work? And I'm like, aww. Yeah, well, yeah. So I think that especially if people are struggling with their older children who don't really like to read, definitely do just find a middle ground, especially with audiobooks. Audiobooks is reading. Yep. And I feel like he's picking up a lot more of the words in the story by sitting there and just staring at the words while somebody tells him. So that and like home improvement projects, like my house has never looked cleaner. Like the bathroom that I haven't finished in 2 years is done.
Yeah.
So like, just like killing home improvement projects over here.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Paula, what about you? How are you doing?
Good. So we're working remotely entirely from home. So the majority of what I do for my work is I've been reading stories aloud. We've been doing trivia Fridays on, have you guys ever played the survival game? Like, Can You Survive?
Oh, yeah.
No, but I love the sound of it already.
Same. Okay.
So the questions are ultimately ridiculous. Like the one we did Friday was how to survive jumping from a building to a dumpster, which I give the caveat of please do not do. Life is already hard enough right now. Please don't jump from the building. But it's crazy some of the answers to these things. I've asked questions about how do you survive quicksand? What do you do when a bull is charging you? So that's been ultimately pretty fun. And I mean, it's tough. My mom and my sister are both nurses. They both work in really critical at-risk departments, so they're dealing with lots of sick people. So my heart goes out to them and to any healthcare worker. They're doing so much. So during Nursing Appreciation Week, there needs to be muffins and apples galore.
Yes. Yes.
But as far as reading, like you guys, I've been binging all my graphic novels, which has been excellent.
Nice.
And I've been making more cleaning products, and my house looks immaculate. I'm like, oh, wow. This is going to be the month where everybody's ovens are going to be clean.
Yeah, right?
Not my house. All my roommate's doing is baking right now. Ooh. It's great.
I would accept that as well. So let's talk about some book recommendations for those that books you have been able to read or just things that you're loving this year. What are some of your favorite just recommendations right now that you want to shove into people's hands during quarantine?
So it's not out until June, which is a bummer. But Mexican Gothic by Silvia Moreno Garcia is genuinely one of my favorite books that I've read so far. It's very much, it is, as the title suggests, a Gothic. It takes place during the 1950s, I believe, in Mexico. And it's about this young woman who basically, she's like a socialite and she's super cool. She's like, I don't know if anyone's ever watched Franny Fisher. She sort of reminds me of, she's got that Franny Fisher energy, but she is Mexican. And she sort of, her father gets this strange letter from her cousin who is married into this rich, well-to-do family. And it's a really strange letter. And her father's like, you know what? I want to send you to this house to go see what is going on with your cousin. And what sort of transpires is, for a lot of the story, very much like a classic Gothic. It has that, definitely has that Rebecca feel to it. And then you hit a point in the story where you sort of go, oh, this is just straight horror now. And some weird stuff starts happening. There's really fabulous characters in it. There's genuinely like freaky goosebump moments. So I'm very excited for that to come out in June. And then I'm almost done. I'm hoping I finish it tonight, reading this nonfiction book called The Compton Cowboys, which is really, really neat. It's basically, it comes out next week, I believe. And it's this look at this group that live in Compton, California, these Black men who ride horses and sort of try to, it's a way to, similarly to how a lot of schools have like poetry groups or, you know, after school meetings, it's the same sort of idea, but it's taking care of horses and riding horses at events, and talks a lot about how these guys, it's very therapeutic to them. It's a really just insightful look at sort of how dangerous and how different life in Compton is. They start, the author at one point starts talking about, basically you get the idea as the story progresses that you can't, every street belongs to a gang and all of the gangs hate each other essentially. And so here are these guys whose lives have sort of been wrapped up with these gangs who have managed to get out of that and figured out that for whatever reason, a Black man on a horse is less of a threat. It's just, it's a fascinating look at a piece of life that I personally had no idea about, living in, being a white young woman living in Massachusetts. And I believe there is a young readers version coming out too, which is good because there's a lot of stuff in this that young people cannot be reading. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's Walter Thompson Hernandez is the author. He's a New York Times reporter. It's really, really good.
Sounds awesome. I also, one of the books that I've just been like screaming about is also kind of a horror novel. Not even kind of, it is a horror novel. It's called The Return by Rachel Harrison. And I read it back at the end of 2019 at the behest of Liberty Hardy, who some of you probably know, she writes for Book Riot. She was like yelling at me at NEBA. She was like, you have to read this book. I can't believe you haven't read this book yet. And I was like, oh, okay, all right, what? and because I am, you know, my coworkers can attest, like I am the Halloween person. In October, I watched 31 horror movies throughout the month of October. I try to read as many scary books as possible, but most of them I'm like, that wasn't scary. It was good. It wasn't scary. the only book that has ever like honestly terrified me was The Exorcist, and it's because I read it in one sitting. I stayed up until the wee hours of the morning reading it and then couldn't sleep, and I was like, that was great. Nothing else will ever scare me. But this book, The Return, is like one of the few books that I found truly creepy. And I think part of it is there's this really crazy juxtaposition. So what you have is this woman goes missing for 2 years. And during that 2 years, basically everyone in her life decides that she has died. They kind of come to the terms of the fact that like she went missing while hiking in this like heavily wooded area where people go missing all the time. Like there's no way she would have survived this. There, she was nowhere near anything. Like there's no way she's alive. And so everyone mourns her. They have a funeral and everything, but her best friend is like, I'm not convinced. Like this feels like something she would do for attention. Like she would want to see who would show up at her funeral. Like she's that type of person. Like she would just want people to be caring about her. And like, I don't know. I don't think she's dead. And 2 years to the date of her disappearance, she shows back up at home with no memory of the last 2 years. She's like, I remember leaving my house to go hiking. And the next thing I knew, I woke up and I was like in the woods on like close to my house and came home. And so everyone's like, okay, that's terrifying. All right, cool. We can work with this. So her group of girlfriends are like, let's have a girls' weekend and we'll try to kind of like reconnect and sort of see if we can figure out what happened a little bit, because she won't talk about it because she's like, I don't remember. And they're like, I feel like you might remember something and you just don't want to tell us. But they also just want to like be friends again because their group has sort of fractured a little bit over the last 2 years. So they go to one of those really kitschy hotels where every room is a different theme and like themed to the max. Like, there's a jungle room and it's like everything from the style of the bed to the bathroom to the wallpaper to the lights to the rug, and all of the decorations is jungle. And then there's like the pink room and everything is pink, and there's
gosh,
so it's this like hilariously like vibrant hotel, right? It's just like insane. And I've been like, I've seen these hotels in real life and they are crazy. And so they go there and they're like gonna have a good time, and then things start getting weird with the girl who had been missing, and it's like something is off and things just kind of start to like, you're reading it and the dread is building and building and building, and it's little things like the thermostat in the rooms just don't work and it's getting colder and colder and colder. Oh, God. And like, you know, like there's like something weird with the bartender and the way he's looking. And then like, you're looking at her and you're like, did she lose a tooth? Like what? And it's, and it just builds and the tension does not let up, and it builds and builds and builds and builds. And by the time it ended, I literally put the book down and I was like, what did I just read?
I've read it and can attest to the fact that there's moments, there's a moment one of the characters is like in the bathroom and the door slams shut or something. And I genuinely had a moment of like, that's real. Like I've had that happen before. That's terrifying. And it's nothing. Like,
right. You know,
so yes.
Yeah. It's like little things that on their own would not, you'd be like, all right, that's weird. But
yeah.
Right. But because of this like underlying tension, like she wrote it so well, it just does not let up. And I was like, so like my muscles were clenched the entire time I was reading it. And I finished it. And it was one of the rare times when I put the book down and I was like checking the corners of my room. I was like, this is all right. I'm okay. And like my blood pressure was really high and I was just like a little jacked up. I was like, all right, this is fine. So yeah, that just came out like a week or two ago, and I made it my staff pick immediately, and I've just been like shoving it at people because every once in a while I'll have customers who are like, I want something scary, and like I've read some Stephen King, and I'm like, no. I'm like, first, have you read The Exorcist? Okay, we got to start there. But this is like one of the first like truly, I would say, scary books that I've read in years. So highly, highly recommend if you are into that, which I feel like Elizabeth muted me for the last 15 minutes because she can't with the horror.
It's true. I literally fainted once watching a clip of a horror movie. Note that I do not say a horror movie. I say a clip of a horror movie. And when I say faint, I mean I hit the wall on the way down to the floor.
Oh, gosh.
Too scary. I can't, but you know what? I have come to terms with this. What it is I'm overly sensitive and I feel the emotions of the characters. So if they're scared, I'm just a wreck on the couch. So you know what? I'm going to read my romance novel or my fantasy novel with my dragons and we're going to be fine. And you have your customers and I have mine. So basically we're just specializing.
Yeah. Hilariously, my husband is just like Elizabeth, and like he is very empathetic with characters in books and movies. And so like he'll read certain things or watch certain things and he'll just be like, oh, I can't do this. And so when I'm sitting there watching my 31 Nights of Halloween ultimate horror movies, he'll be like, do you want to watch like Wallace and Gromit or like Corpse Bride?
Aww.
And
I'm
like, no.
This is hard.
I'm going to watch Hereditary. Okay, bye.
My husband has literally taken the remote out of my hands and given a husband veto on things.
That's smart.
for like a month and I'm going to have to deal with you at 2 a.m. terrified. And he's like, husband Vito, I can see your face. You're not handling this well. This, by the way, was like Supernatural on TV. Like, I don't know. In the first episode.
To be fair.
Vito. And I was like, all right. Well, you know me at this point. So that's fair.
Supernatural is the main reason I am now terrified of chain emails. I can't. I just can't. Has anybody else seen that episode?
No, because I'm already terrified of chain emails.
As soon as I saw that, I was like, okay, we're done. So every time I get a chain email, I literally like throw my cell phone across the room. I'm so lucky it has not shattered. I'm just like, no, all right.
See, I want this weird guy. I love horror, and I love, like, the aesthetic of certain horror movies that are creepy, but I'm also the biggest chicken. So, like, I can handle it in doses. I can handle stuff like, I just binge-watched Scream, which, like, most of the time, I don't even know if it counts, because it's, like, not super scary, but still a horror, you know.
I liked it.
I love Scream.
Yeah.
But I tried to read Head Full of Ghosts by Paul Tremblay, and I got to a certain point and went, absolutely not, and closed the book and put it away.
That's so funny. I love that book.
Like, that is such a compliment to Paul.
Honestly, he would be so happy. Also, he'll be thrilled. This is the second time we've talked about that book on the podcast. Because in our, I think it was during maybe our Halloween episode, we were listing some of our favorite scary books, and I love that one because it's like The Exorcist meets reality TV. And like, I don't know, it's really fun and creepy, and yeah. So he'll be excited. I can tag him and be like, Paul, we gushed about your book.
Get a shout out.
Maybe he'll come on the podcast next time.
Another horror one.
Yeah,
I have a wholesome book recommendation.
Tell us.
Anybody who knows me is going to see this coming from a mile away, but the book I will not stop screaming at people to read is The House in the Cerulean Sea by T.J. Klune, which is just, it is technically an adult book, but I've actually been recommending it as a family read aloud because it has some really great, it reads like, I don't want to say Harry Potter because that's what everybody's been comparing it to, but in my head, it reminds me a lot of A Wrinkle in Time, where it's kids learning about how kind of shitty the world can be, but adults helping them navigate it while also figuring their own crap out. It is basically about this social worker named Linus, who works for the department in charge of the care of magical youth or something like that. And it's like,
sounds right.
Yeah, it's like this big Douglas Adams-y, there's extremely upper management, and he is tasked with visiting the home of Arthur Parnassus, who has some magical orphans that he's been taking care of. Linus is chosen because he's very stoic and good at his job, and he'll be impartial, and of course, like, no, he just turns into a big giant ball of mush. Like, in my head, I picture James Corden.
Nice.
As Linus. But it is the sweetest book. It is the nicest book. It is, I have been recommending it for the last few weeks because it came out at the end of March, and I just keep getting texts from people just like, oh my god, this part, I'm crying, it's so nice. It's just like, if you need a really wholesome, everything is going to be okay escape, I cannot recommend that book enough. And if you don't,
beautiful.
Yeah, the cover's so gorgeous. Like, Tor really outdid themselves. T.J. Klune has been around in the internets for a while. He's had some, self-published, I think, but he has a very devoted fan base called the Klunetics. He also has a YA book coming out. It just got pushed to July, I think, called The Extraordinaries, which I also highly recommend because it's all about gay angsty teens writing superhero fanfic.
Yes, and that's so awesome.
It's basically like Tumblr spat out a book. It was great. I loved it. highly recommend Cerulean Sea. I think that book changed something in me. Like, I probably would have been a lot more jaded about everything right now if I didn't have this like really nice hug to go back to.
It felt like, part of me felt like I forgot that sci-fi and fantasy could be like happy and light and like have color. And as I was, I read it as well and I've been recommending it like crazy because it's just, it's so lovely. But part of the reason I love it is that the way the story progresses, it's almost like when you watch Wizard of Oz and everything is in black and white at the beginning, and it's written that way too. When you first meet him, it's like really sparse. I feel like I just blew Abby's mind.
It's so true.
It's like really sparse and really spare. And at first I was like, this is so weird that it's written this way. And then he ends up in the house and all of a sudden it just unfolds and it's full of life and color, and it's like, that's why he wrote it like that. And
that's, it's just beautiful. It
really, really well.
Oh, that is such a good take. Oh my god. It's basically like, I keep saying, if Douglas Adams was in a really good mood and wrote The Umbrella Academy, like, yeah, that is the, like, if you throw this all in a pot and mix it up, that's the book.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I like that.
It's so good. And I'll also just do a quick shout out to Gideon the Ninth, aka my favorite book of all time ever, because it's just hilarious.
Yes. Big love for Gideon over here. Yeah. My, I have the arc of Harrow the Ninth, which I haven't read yet. I let my husband read it first because he was like, grabby hands, grabby hands, grabby hands. And I was like, okay, I'm in the middle of like nine other things. You can read it. And he really, really loved it. So
I got to read it back in October.
I was going to say, they sent you like the e-galley, right?
I got it very early. Thank you, Tor.com. I love you so much. Now it's at the point now where I have to sit on this for a year and not talk about it. And it's a very special kind of torture.
Yeah. Yeah. Those books are, they are special. They are awesome. They are, I do tend to give a caveat that it's like high sci-fi fantasy. Like, it's definitely dense. Like, you have to like stick with it if you're not used to reading, I don't know, like intense, but like, it's not a popcorn book. Like, you have to pay attention. You have to like stick with it. And then all of a sudden, like, it'll hit a tipping point and you will not put it down.
I'm going to plug the audiobook for it just because of that, because the audiobook is one of the most easily digest. It's like it's a comfort thing for me now. Her voices are so on point. For Harrow has this like really obnoxious royal accent. Gideon's a bro. Like, the audiobook actually helped me understand the book itself.
That's a really good call. Yeah, the audiobook, that would be a really good way to do it. I also just shout out again to Liberty. She's been rereading Gideon ahead of Harrow the Ninth coming out, and she's been like recapping every chapter. And I found that so helpful because I was like, oh, that was significant. And I totally didn't realize it at the time, but now that makes sense. Like, it's just been great to kind of relive Gideon through her little recaps. So that's on Tor.com.
Gideon, I think, is like, it feels formal. Like, it when you said dense, so the first blurb about it is it's lesbian necromancers in space. So I went in expecting like this madcap, ridiculous slapstick, you know. And first of all, she's not even a necromancer and they're in space for like all ages. When I read it, I was like, this is like Agatha Christie's 10 Little Indians.
Yes.
With skeletons. It's like this puzzle book, and like, people are dropping left and right every chapter, and who's left at the end, and who could it possibly be? And then, oh my gosh, the butler did it. I mean, no.
but it's a locked room mystery.
It was not this like cutesy, I mean, it was hilarious. It was.
Oh God.
It's mostly because the main character was just like kind of stupid, like just very uneducated, and she would make all these huge mistakes and you'd be like, oh honey, oh my god, okay, you've literally been like raised in like a barn or something. So it's funny, but it's not slapstick. It was Agatha Christie in space for an hour and then with skeletons.
Gideon's a himbo. I cannot unthink that thought now. No, it's very, the humor in it is also just very relevant, like current.
Yeah.
Like, her meme references are just constant. Yeah. And there's a couple of them in Harrow, which I won't spoil because you have to just sit there and scream, I cannot believe that this happened. And I actually emailed the editor, like, please don't cut that. But like, it's just, it's a wholly different kind of sci-fi.
Yeah.
Which I love. And it's not necessarily for everybody right now because it takes a lot of brain power, or, mm-hmm. but audiobook all the way.
Yeah. No, that's a really good call. The audiobook is, that's a good way to do it. But yes, big, big love for Gideon. What are other people reading and recommending right now?
I've been, similar to what everybody was saying, I've been struggling with finding stuff to read and like starting a lot of stuff and then being like, oh, that's not what I need right now, and trying to figure it out. One book I really am recommending to everyone right now is The Everlasting by Katie Simpson Smith.
Yeah.
It's set in Rome in four different time periods. The first is a scientist in Rome in 2015. Then it's a Medici princess in the 1500s, a priest in the 800s, and then a Christian martyr in the 100s. And it's really good, really interesting exploration of, you know, death and love. And it has throughout, sprinkled throughout, is commentary in brackets from Satan, which is just one of my favorite literary devices. So
yes,
it's really very good. And I think it came out a few weeks ago and is not enough people are hearing about it because of everything.
I love that.
And have a little Satan as a treat.
It's got an awesome cover too.
Oh, it has a really good cover and just everything. And I will warn people, the first perspective, like the first point of view, is like kind of, it's contemporary fiction and it's just like, oh, okay, this is good. And then it gets going when it goes back into the past.
Awesome. Who else? Who hasn't gone yet?
Let's see. So I am reading, or I'm starting to read, Under the Rainbow by Celia Lasky. Big gay books, because that's what I do.
Hell yeah.
This is, so I didn't read too much into what necessarily the book, the plot is about. I didn't want to ruin it for myself. Somebody, I think one of our reps try to sell it to me as like a adult version of like Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Mm-hmm.
So in the book, there is this town in Kansas that has been deemed the most homophobic town in the United States. And so there is a lot of, there is a LGBTQ plus volunteer task force that took a bunch of volunteers to go and like live and work in the community for 2 years to try to like open hearts and minds. And hilarity ensues, and it's between the perspectives of a couple of like the kids and the adults that were in this task force. And it's not, I'm only 30 pages into it, and it's pretty funny. It's very lighthearted so far. I'm waiting for it to kind of like crack open and be a little bit deeper than I was expecting it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not terrible so far. It's really, really good. And you know, a lot of people have sung this praise about it. The woman who wrote this is a queer author. So that's what I've been reading so far, and it was great. I've also been trying to read classics. I've never really read any Shakespeare. I know, it's shocking. And I really wanted to read Macbeth. And yes. I'm challenging myself with it because the language for me, and I don't know if it's because English wasn't my first language, but the language for me is really difficult. I keep pressing myself up against this.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to look for books to read alongside it to try to get the plot and the structure, because mm-hmm. I've had a lot of people tell me that this was their favorite Shakespeare play that's not Romeo and Juliet. So I'm...
It's fun. Witches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you're definitely not alone on that. And I mean, we talked about that a little bit in our... Was it our last episode where we talked about classics?
Yes.
And like, I mean... it doesn't get much more difficult than Shakespeare as far as tough old English. Once you kind of get into the rhythm of it, it's fun. And actually, I find helpful sometimes with Shakespeare if you can find a performance of it online somewhere. I find that really, really helps. I went when Joss Whedon did Much Ado About Nothing with just like a bunch of his pals.
I love that version.
Yeah. And it was so funny because I went to go see it because I was like, you know, Whedon and his friends. Yes, please. In black and white. Yeah, of course I'm going to go see that. And I sat down in the theater and it started and I went, oh, right, Shakespeare. about 5 minutes in, I had literally forgotten that I'm not used to Shakespeare because you just get swept up in the performance of it and you figure it out context-wise. So actually, if you can find a performance of Macbeth, I think that would really, really help your reading of it.
And a lot of Shakespeare companies, I know the Globe's been doing some, RSC has done some, that they're doing free ones right now, like allowing you to access their recordings free because of everything going on. But yeah if you need any recommendations for anything to watch, any productions of Macbeth, let me know. I love my some Shakespeare.
Liverbox is the most amazing app. So basically any play, book that's in the public domain, you can download offline. And the live Shakespeare readings have all been amazing that I've downloaded and listened to. So I highly recommend it. And if you want to go super old school and do some Greek tragedies, they are also amazing.
Yes. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Liverbox. Love it.
Ah, that's amazing. Yay.
And it's free.
Yay. I feel like that's so important right now is like having resources like that because people are cooped up in their houses. And it's like as we're recording this, the last 2 days, there was like a 48-hour period where you could watch the Phantom of the Opera. It was It was like the 25th anniversary.
The 25th anniversary recording that was done at the Royal Albert Hall in 2011.
Cool. I've been loving seeing stuff like that. Literally, like the other day, ABC had like a Disney sing-along with like celebrities. Yes. They just like sang Disney songs. And I was like, man, I really hope that like once all of this is over, we still get cool content like this because like, I don't know, I feel like it's like bringing people together because it's like everyone's coming together to like watch these things or like download these things or read these things. I'm like, oh, it's just really, it feels like we have this kind of global community finally. It's really nice.
Well, according to Station 11, we kind of do. They travel around and perform music and Shakespeare, so
yeah, exactly, you
know. I'm actually in a theater group that we actually started because I was joking about how Joss Whedon would just get together with his friends and read plays, and so we started doing that, and we did a reading recently over Zoom and it worked out really well. We're like, oh cool, so we're just set up to be like that group in Station 11. Great. We're going to be the minstrels of the apocalypse. It's great. Yeah. But it's really fun watching everything. I saw some people joke about the fact that like Hamilton is supposed to come out next year still. And wouldn't it be nice if...
Yeah, come on, Lynn.
We're just waiting for them to finish editing it. That's all.
Yeah. It's recorded.
It's recorded.
And recorded for a while.
It's been recorded for a very long time.
You know what would be extremely dope is if drive-in theaters came back.
Yeah.
And they played that at a drive-in theater and everyone just sang along because that would be extremely cool.
I really wanted it.
It would be like Rocky Horror Picture Show, but Hamilton, basically.
I want it.
There are two drive-ins up here.
I was going to say, we have like two near us. We have...
Call them. See what they can do.
I mean, no matter what happens, I'm going to find a way to get it and I'm going to project it onto the side of my house.
Nice. Can I make a hard swerve back to Shakespeare for a second?
Oh, please.
totally worth checking out if you guys aren't familiar with it. Ryan North has two books.
Yes.
And one's Romeo and or Juliet. And the other is the other Hamlet?
I think that's To Be or Not to Be.
Okay.
Yes.
They're so, it's kind of infuriating how smart Ryan North is. It's like, so he's one of those people who's like super under the radar, super humble about it. And then when you realize he's like the dinosaur comics guy and also has these books and also Squirrel Girl, it's like, okay, I see you, man. I know what you're up to. But they're really brilliant because adult choose your own adventure. And I love the Romeo and Juliet one because it was basically my very first read through. I read through as Juliet. Mm-hmm. And I ended up running away from Romeo and ending up in a bar and meeting a bro. And then we lived a life at sea until both of us died. Like that was,
that's the plot
of my Romeo and Juliet. But I think the super brilliant thing about it, and they mention it at the very beginning, is that the play is in the book. So if you just want to read Romeo and Juliet, you can read it straight through.
Oh, that's cool.
But here are all of these other cool options for you. And also there's art from brilliant, talented comic book artists peppered throughout it. So it's good. Yeah. It's incredibly good. And I feel like it flies under the radar all the time. And I recommend it to kids who are struggling with Shakespeare because it's like, this is going to help you get through it. I promise.
If you want a really solid idea of like the cadence and the emotion of Shakespeare, if you can find it, which I think if you just Google like David Tennant Hamlet, David Tennant did a version of Hamlet, which is just iconic because he's nuts. Like David Tennant's just really good at nuts.
Yeah.
But he really just like gets all the way into the nitty gritty of it. And I feel like Hamlet and Macbeth are both shows that are just like, oh yeah, it's about this one thing, but really there's just all this darkness. Yeah. So it's a really good, it's not Macbeth, but it's a really good way of like hearing how it works, how the language works.
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome. Also David Tennant.
Just David Tennant.
Like, oh wow, book people are Shakespeare nerds? Who knew?
Listen, my daughter's name is Cordelia, okay?
I actually have been meaning to ask if that was a Buffy thing.
I mean, it's Buffy first, but bonus Shakespeare.
That's my
with like a little bit of Anne and Green Gables sprinkled in.
Oh, yeah, love that.
She came down the other day and I was watching Buffy and she was like, can I watch? And I was like, no. you're 2.5. No.
Okay. So I actually started doing just a random Buffy rewatch where I'd just be like, oh yeah, I'll watch this episode. I queued up Seeing Red yesterday, completely forgetting everything in it. But so I'm going to go back and watch
episode.
I have to watch Once More with Feeling again today.
Yeah. I watched, I've been doing a rewatch because I do a rewatch every couple of years. But I've been listening to the podcast Buffering the Vampire Slayer and like they're rewatching it. So I've been trying to catch up and I'm on season 5 and I just got to the body.
It's a really sad episode, you guys.
And it always just gets in there. It just really catches me off guard every time. I'm never ready for it.
No. There's no being ready for that. My roommate follows that. She really likes that podcast. And apparently they have a book club now.
Yeah, it's like with their Patreon.
Okay.
Yeah.
It feels like everybody has a book club now.
I know, right? Which is great. But I also like want to be in all of them, but also can't keep up with all the reading. So, and a lot of, I don't know about you guys, but I'll join these like virtual book clubs and then we'll be like really good for like a few books in a row and then it just falls apart. Like no one does the reading and it just devolves and like no one talks about it ever again.
Mm. I'm in one. I don't know how many of you know Nikki Much.
Oh yeah.
Scholastic Rep. You're in. Yeah. So we did it's like 250 people in this Facebook group called Our Quiet blah blah blah. I don't remember the full name of it. So we did House in the Cerulean Sea at my recommendation because I love it. It was 20 people in the Zoom chat last night, all above the age of 50. And then there was me over here trying to talk about the queer undertones of the book. It was great. It was a good book club though. Where the next one is we write upon sticks.
Ooh. Good. I actually have that one. See, I didn't join this one because I haven't
I haven't bought Cerulean Sea yet, and I don't think I ever got the arc of it, but I have We Ride Upon Styx. I can read that one. Okay.
I haven't read it yet, but apparently it's dark.
It's good. So good.
Yeah.
I've been reading a lot of dark stuff. As I mentioned earlier, I read a book called The Perfect Mother by Amy Molloy, which is about a mommy group and one of the babies gets kidnapped and it's real dark. And I'm in a mommy group, and we're all like really, really close. And I was just like trying to imagine like what would happen if like one of the babies got kidnapped, and it's like, interesting. And like the, you know, you're reading it or listening to it and you're like, I mean, I think these are good people. Like, I don't think they would, but I don't know. Their alibis don't all line up. Like, it's really good though. And then I just started listening to a Lisa Jewell book called Then She Was Gone. And she writes, you know, dark thriller mysteries. So yeah, I'm in that mode of reading right now. Just like the darker, the better, I guess. But I had been reading like really cute romances before that.
I've been reading romances too, because my brain needs something where I know there's going to be a happy ending. Mm-hmm. And so the two that I've been reading lately with varying degrees of steamy content. We have the Happy Ever After playlist by Abby Jimenez.
Yes.
The audiobook is really excellently done. It is technically a sequel. If you want to, you can read The Friend Zone first. This follows a separate set of characters that are in the first book. This book follows Sloane, and who was in the first book, and Jason. And what is happening is Sloane is 2 years out from a tragic, tragic loss. And she finds a dog in the middle of the road, and she's calling the caller, and it's a guy who has been on tour. He's a musician. He's been on tour across the globe. And she's like, how could you do this to your dog? And he's like, actually, I need to break up with my girlfriend who was supposed to be watching him.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
She didn't call me for these last 2 weeks telling me that my dog was missing. Mm-hmm. That person's just not a good person. But so he's like, can you please, like, he's like, you can either put the dog in the kennel and I will pay for boarding fees. Or, and she's like, well, no, I kind of like your dog. And this is like the first happiness she's really had in her life in 2 years. And she's like, well, I'll just watch your dog until you come back. And he's like, are you sure? I'm going to be gone for like a month. And she's like, you know, I just really like the dog. And they start texting back and forth.
Aww.
Really genuine relationship springs up first around the dog, Tucker. But then they're just both good people, and they have a similar sense of humor, and this really genuine relationship blooms. And then when they finally see each other's pictures, they're like, oh my gosh, you're cute too. Oh my gosh. And so he's a musician. He's a bigger musician than he let on. She's gorgeous. They meet, they have this really genuine, there is no will they or won't they, you know, something is keeping us apart relationship. There's no drama of why didn't you just wait 15 seconds to let that person explain. There's no ridiculous mm-hmm. tropes like that. And it's, there is drama in the book, of course, so you can't have a book without tension and drama. But it's not them against each other. It's outside forces against them. And it left me feeling so happy mm-hmm. and just wholesome. And I mean, well, there were parts that you do not want your mother in the room for, I will just say, or your children. It was just happy. Mm-hmm. And that was the Happy Ever After playlist by Abby Jimenez. The other one that I just finished was The Bromance Book Club by Kay Adams. And that is a group of, there's a pro baseball player whose marriage is failing and he's just a wreck, and his his teammates like pull him out of a hotel room where he's just drunk as a skunk, and they're like, come back to our place, you're joining book club. And he's like, what are you talking about? And these are like the broiest bros who ever did bro. And they're like, we read romance novels to understand the feminist underpinnings of society so that we can further understand the ways in which women feel romance and desire romance so we can make our wives happy and improve our marriage. And he's like, you are pulling my leg. And they're like, no, you need to read Seducing the Duchess. That is your homework. And come back when you have read this, and you need to like figure out her backstory, man, because backstory is the underpinnings of all of her life experiences. And he's like, oh okay. And it works, because he'd never really considered some of the ways in which their relationship had been. And it also, I mean, again, this one was, I would not really call it steamy. There are a couple scenes, but again, it just felt wholesome and happy. And you're just like, all right, okay. Like, he put in the work, like their relationship is working again. They both needed to figure out some stuff here. But it really, both of these books were easily digestible. Even during brain fog right now, and that was just such a relief, and happy endings, and that was just really nice.
I feel like we need to have an episode where we just gush about cute romance books, because I've been reading a lot of them.
This is totally random, but I've thought about this before, because this is how my brain works. I was like, what Avengers would read romance novels? And Thor. The answer is obviously Thor.
Thor 1,000% would love,
like,
them.
That's the only answer. Like, Captain America, nah, he's not gonna be probably reading not. Novels.
Avengers would absolutely read a romance novel,
especially like the pulpy 1940s housewives, blah blah blah. Like, he would love them, especially if they have a happy ending.
I think he would read them, but he would hide them, whereas Thor would be reading would passages read out them. Loud.
He'd be like at the pool reading them. He'd be at the book club. He'd be the only guy with all of the little biddies with their wine and Thor.
Yeah. Right.
No, I agree.
Yep. Yeah. Whereas like fanfic. Cap would read them, but like quietly to himself, not letting anyone see, because he would know that like if Tony saw him, he'd never hear the end of it.
He'd hide it under the pillow.
Yeah.
To try and understand women.
Yeah.
Thor would be like, Thor would be like, can I buy you a drink? I'm sorry, I'm a lesbian. I love women too.
Exactly.
He's this golden retriever where he's like, yes, let us be friends.
May there be 5 million movies with Chris Hemsworth. I hope they Wolverine him and he's like an old man before the last one.
Yes, please.
God, I would love to see an adaptation of the Jane Austen Club. With the Avengers. So watch it.
I need that fanfic now.
Oh, it exists. It's somewhere. You just gotta dig for it.
Oh, I need it.
We got the perfect
it.
Ratio. Mostly male cast, one female. I can see how this is gonna work.
I need it.
I want it to happen so badly now.
I need it in my life.
I've already found fanfics.
Yes!
The first one, they're discussing Harry Potter.
Was anyone timing that? That was like under a minute.
Abby was on top of that. She was like getting it going.
This is like my one true talent in life is Googling things, especially if there's fanfic involved.
Oh my God.
As booksellers, we have to be good at Googling.
Oh yeah, that's like 85% of our job.
Right, minimum. We have to preserve the fact that people think we're these just like repositories of knowledge. We know all the things, but we're really just really good at Googling the right keywords.
Meanwhile, we're standing in front of a computer and it's like, oh yeah.
Searching our database, but it's like, no, I'm Googling.
I'm literally punching in children's book, cat elevator or something like that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep. I am the fifth Hokage of Google. Yes. I do wild card searches. Things pull up. Oh, that book that's YA that came out in this time period with the moon on it. This is your book.
Uh-huh. And it's so satisfying when they're like, yes, that's my book. And you're like, I know. Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's like, to be a bookseller, you have to be really good at hyping books. And you have to be good at Googling.
Yep.
That's it. That's the job.
Yep. Booksellers and librarians were like, oh, the two best skills. I love it. So we're talking about fictional characters. Let's jump into my favorite game of Rachel's, which is which literary character do you think would do well in quarantine and which literary character do you think would absolutely fall apart during quarantine?
Okay. So I'm thinking Cersei, particularly Madeline Miller's Cersei.
Ooh.
Rule, hands down. One, used to being trapped on an island. Two, goddess. Also, witchcraft. Also, she can turn people and or things into bacon. I am set. I'm going to survive. I'm going to have BLTs. I'm going to have magic. And I'm going to be used to someone that's trapped in a small place. So I think I'm going to do all right.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Yep.
So that's who I'm thinking would do the best. Who I think would absolutely do the worst. Have any of you guys read Attack on Titan?
Yes.
Okay. So anybody from Attack on Titan, they're doomed. All right, guys, I'm going to keep you trapped in this house. Can't go anywhere.
No. Terrible. I think young Harry Potter, like pre-Hogwarts Harry Potter, would be great. Because he already lives basically in quarantine, living under the stairs. I think adult Harry Potter would be the absolute worst, and he'd be so annoying about it. He would just...
Mm-hmm. He would be awful.
He'd be so... Oh, God. Hermione would be like, for the love of God, Harry, stop showing up at my house.
Wash your hands. I would have to say I've been standing by this since the very beginning of when this first started happening. Kaz Brekker from Six of Crows, because that boy has so much trauma packed into that body that he just will die if someone touches him. He's got his gloves on all the time. I think he's all set. He's got it on lock, basically. And I think literally any character from an F. Scott Fitzgerald novel. So badly. I really, Daisy would be like, could last 20 minutes and then be like, I need a drink and leave and die. That would be it.
Yeah. They would like have a coronavirus party the way people used to have pox parties.
They would
parties.
Be the ones who are having, forget the social distancing, they're the ones who are like, we're not going to get it.
Yeah.
And who are partying together.
Yeah. Jay would be like, oh, I tested positive. Come on over.
Yep.
We'll all get it and then we'll just party together and it'll be great. And then
Nick would be the one who goes to the party, but he's still wearing a mask and gloves.
Yeah.
This is like Dance of the Red Macabre, like all over again.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So I also am Team Cersei for surviving all of the things. And I have a kidlet one that came to me this past week that I cannot shake. I can't figure out what he would be better at. So I don't know how many of you are familiar with the Mother Bruce series of books, the picture books by Ryan Higgins.
Oh yes. My God.
I can't decide if he would be the very best or the very worst. Because in the first book, he's like, yeah, totally socially distancing. Please leave me the hell alone. Like, get out of my swamp. But by the towards the like next couple of books, he's got the Goslings and they're all like, we want our friends over. Like, I don't know where he would fall.
Hold on a second. Is Mother Bruce Shrek?
Yeah.
A little bit.
A little bit. It works a little bit, except he actually ends up like,
yeah.
He's not like
Myers, basically.
Yeah. When I do my readings, I read the books for short time all the time, and when I do it, I'm like, oh no, please leave me alone. Like, by the end of it, he's just doing it all for show.
Yeah.
So it follows a similar arc.
He's got a swamp.
He's got a swamp. So I like to think that he would be okay with it, but then after a while he would miss everybody. And
I think so, because that's kind of the plot of Mother Bruce and the Perfect Storm. Bruce's Big Storm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like there's a huge storm and all of his friends invite themselves over to his house and he's like, oh, I hate this. But then at the end he's like, well,
All right.
This isn't so bad.
Yep.
You guys are kind of fun.
Those books are so cute.
They are so cute.
I have a couple. So I think the two best who would be really good at quarantining themselves is astronaut Mark Watney from The Martian. Because mm-hmm. he is trapped on Mars and, you know, can be very resourceful, and all he can do is eat potatoes.
Yeah.
Most hobbits would be really good at quarantining because they don't really like to go out of their little homes, their hobbit homes.
Yep.
The person who would be the worst, there's two people, actually. The person that I think would be the worst at quarantining is Gandalf, because he keeps trying to get the hobbits to go on a freaking adventure, and Bilbo's like, I just want to stay home, dude. And he's like, no, go on adventure with me. So yep. he'd be the worst.
Yep.
The worst.
He'd be like, come on out, it's just the flu.
Right, exactly. It's fine. Have a party. Let's go on an adventure. Let's go, Bilbo. And he's like, I don't want to go nowhere. So there's that. And I think that the person that I personally would never want to be quarantined with is the main character in Duck's Newburyport. Because she just is a one long run-on sentence. Could you imagine?
Oh, my God.
Could you imagine her just chittering away while she's, like, working on her sourdough starter the entire time? Yeah.
She would totally be a sourdough starter person.
Oh, she would. Although,
apparently everybody's making bagels now.
Oh, we're on to bagels now. Okay.
Bagels on, like, day two of quarantine. I demand credit.
This is all Elizabeth's fault.
Everyone's just catching up. That's hilarious.
So those would be mine.
Yes.
Right on. Elizabeth or Joe, do you have any thoughts?
No, all conscious thoughts have fled my skull.
That's fair.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say for people who would be good at it, I was going with Prospero from The Tempest for similar reasons as Cersei, magic, yeah. and out on an island on his own. And I don't think, like, wind or water spirits like Ariel can get Corona, so he'd be fine because he'd definitely still need him to do everything
for
him. But yeah, in terms of people who would do poorly, I have been reading Little Women as comfort, and I think Jo March would be really bad at quarantine. I think she and Lori would be like, especially if they were in opposite houses, like they could see each other, but they couldn't be. It wouldn't go well.
That's amazing.
Yep. Oh, man. That's really funny.
You know what's going to happen going back to the Lord of the Rings? The eagles are going to show up as soon as coronavirus is over. The eagles are just going to show up, and that's going to be it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Where were you?
Where were you? You could have been deployed at any time in season 4.
Ah! Oh, my God. Come on.
Y'all, I think we're a bunch of nerds.
We're super nerdy.
Yeah.
Don't know where you got that idea.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's great. Cool. All right. Does anybody have any, like, last minute bookish things they want to just yell at our listeners?
I do have one really quick one, just because it's an amazing 2-part, soon to be 3-part series. It's called Stand Still and Stay Silent. It's by Mina Sundberg. It's independently published, and it's a graphic novel, and it's so amazing. It takes 90 years after this plague sweeps over the land. And if you love Disney's Atlantis, this is an amazing series. I just love it, love it, love it.
Question for you, Paula. Is that based on the webcomic?
Yes, it is.
Yes, it's so good. They made it
beautiful.
No way. Okay, sorry.
Hiveworks. They're amazing. I found them and I was like, you're in hardcover and you're beautiful and there's extras. Yes.
That's awesome.
Made my night. Oh, my sweet Jesus. Yes, I'm so excited.
They're amazing. And the quality, there's quality, and it's hardback.
Oh my God. So she made this poster that I showed my husband a couple months ago when we when we were talking about different languages, and she shows the branches of like the different Scandinavian languages and how they write cats and how cats say meow in different Scandinavian languages. And I'm just like, hey, this looks really cool. And I started reading the comic and it was just mind-blowingly good. It was so good. So I'm so glad that they have like a physical format, because I've been reading the webcomic and I love it so much. I love it. Love it. So nerdy and great. Okay. Yay. I'm done. All right. I'm done.
Okay. Aww. So glad I mentioned it.
That's awesome. It's so cute. Cool. All right. So I think we'll wrap up here. If you guys want to plug your social media, your store social media, your library social media, whatever, feel free to do that. Now I'm also going to put links in the show notes, so you can do that as well.
Yeah, you can find me and all of my carefully curated nonsense and also occasionally some book reviews and, you know, book industry tweets at Rachel_Conrad, and it's RACHAEL, or else I don't know what you're going to find.
If you guys want to play along with our Friday trivia or listen to us do some story times, it is Library Week coming up. Find us on Facebook at My Not Sleeper Library or on our Instagram page, which is My Not Sleeper Library.
I have my own Instagram page. It's at BiblioReca. And my mom gave me a huge tub of my baby clothes and all of my baby pictures and like pictures of me growing up. And it's really nice to walk down memory lane. So I'm going to be posting a lot of like really choice, awesome baby pictures there.
That's adorable.
And obviously book reviews and things like that. Okay, I'm done.
You guys can find my gratuitously overposed photos of fantasy novels and romance novels on my Bookstagram. That's my Instagram for books, hence Bookstagram. And mine is Does It Have a Dragon? That's does.it.have.a.dragon. And yeah, I do point out whether or not books have dragons in them.
I have a Twitter account that is currently a lot of Animal Crossing, but also frequently interspersed with screaming about queer YA. You follow me at Abby the Cleric. I also talk about Dungeons and Dragons a lot. And I'm hoping that the more people I tell about this, the more active it'll be. I and another New England bookseller have an Instagram called Booksellers and Brews, where we pair craft beer with whatever we're reading right then. We're hoping to get that back up. Yeah, it's fun.
I love that.
The puns we try to stretch are really bad. So, yeah.
That's great.
That's amazing.
My personal Twitter is Joe Swent, so Joswense. I'm trying to be better at that, but my Bookstagram, I do post a fair amount of book reviews, which is Joe Swent's Reads.
Awesome. My Bookstagram is Momrath's Reads, as in Alice. And let's see, Gibson's. Right now, we are doing 99-cent shipping on orders over $10 to within the continental U.S., we got 99 problems, but shipping ain't one. So take advantage of that. Or you can actually, when you're ordering online, you can choose to pay full price for media mail shipping to help us offset those costs. And that's $3.50 for the first book, an additional 50 cents per additional books. So we're doing that. And we're all over social media. You can just Google us, Gibson's Bookstore. You'll find us. Cool. Guys, thanks for hanging out and being nerdy and talking about books and stuff.
Thanks for having me, man.
Hey. Cool. All right. Thank you all so much for being here, and we should do this again soon.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Hey, bye guys.
Bye kids.
Bye. Bye.